there today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, the number of frauds involving bogus tradespeople calling to victims' homes has almost doubled this year. According to crime statistics released by An Garda Síochána on Tuesday, certain types of frauds which become common during the pandemic have continued to increase significantly, with bogus tradespeople fraud up more than 80%. Well, policy and council advisor at the Consumer Association of Ireland, Dermot Jewell, is on the line. Dermot, good morning and welcome to Kildare Today again.
Morning, Owen. Thanks very much. Lovely to be back.
Just tell us what, I suppose, a bogus tradesperson is and how concerned would you be at those figures? 80% increase?
Well, from the outset, the increase is very much of concern. What happens is that this is, to all intents and purposes, known as doorstep selling. And you will very often find that the approach that's generally taken is that there'll be a knock on the door or a ring at the doorbell, and an individual will be there, and generally they will say something like, "We're working very close by, doing some work for a neighbour of yours, and we're only here for today or maybe a couple of days more because we're nearly finished. They're delighted with the work, and we did notice that perhaps your gutters or your roof, or as we were on the roof, we noticed something in the back garden, etc., and we think you may need our services." And it's at that point that, no matter whom you are, and it's, most people are very, very good natured, and they also, that note of concern gets them a little bit worried. Mm-hmm. But the key to every element of that is, okay, this is news to me. Leave me your give me your card or your number or your details, and I'll get in touch with you. I need to speak to my partner or my friend or my sister. Mention any name you like, so that they don't believe you're living on your own.
Right.
And whatever you do, do not let them cross the threshold. But basically, be as pleasant as you can. But basically, say no. Always say no. You should never buy anything from anybody at a doorstep until you've had time to work on it and think upon it and right. Know who they are.
When we say fraud, then how does this become fraudulent?
How it becomes fraudulent is it gets particularly nasty as time goes on. It has been known that a number of people will, once they have had the ability to enter your house, they potentially can sit down with you and say, "Okay, look, the situation is this. We need a proportion of the money now, and we need it. It's the only way that we can progress because we need to purchase some stuff in it, some equipment or some requirements in advance." And they will say, they very often will say that they won't be accepting your cash. A lot of the time they will insist upon only cash. Others will say, if we can organise that now, it'll be the thing to do. They will, and have done on occasion, no matter how well people have done their best to engage with them, they have actually encouraged them and accompanied them down to their bank, down to their machine where they extracted money. And with that in detail, then it progressed to a worse condition, which is where more money was taken on the next occasion. And this is how the fraudulent element starts to be engaged with.
I know that these type of tradespeople would only, or bogus tradespeople would only deal with cash, or majority would deal with cash, but some ask for bank account details, and that immediately is a red flag. You should never give your details to anyone.
No, never. And I mean, every bank states that every single time that you engage with them, although it's predominantly online, it must be said. But it's true. The focus always is, is always on cash in one way or another. They will either look for cash on the day, and if you don't have it, as I say, that urgency is heightened. It's very pleasantly done. It's very professionally done. These people know exactly how to engage with people and how to gain their confidence. And undermine their concerns. And as I say, look, it's no problem. We'll happily take you down to the bank there now. And worse, there have been some occasions where, with beggar's belief, but someone said, "We'll hang, Joe here will hang on till you get back." And it just gets worse. It's quite frightening.
Can't it be hard, though, Dermot, to recognise, I suppose, legitimate and genuine people from those who are bogus? And I'm thinking of, if you're somebody who's living at home on your own, perhaps in the older age cohort, and you're looking out at your gutters and saying, they badly need to be done. They really, really do, but I don't have anyone that can do them. And then if somebody turns up and says, I'll do the gutters for you, it's very hard to say no, you know, because it's a job that you've wanted done for quite some time.
Of course it is, and that's a perfect example. And the only advice I can give is that, unfortunately, it's shocking to say it, but you really can't trust too many people these days. And this is why the interesting reverse of that is that you will rarely get qualified tradespeople knocking on your door looking for business, because in all honesty, 99.99% of the time they are very, very busy and they need to be approached. So with that in mind, but even leaving it aside, regardless of whom appears at the door, you don't know them, you don't know anything about them whatsoever. And there's no reason why you should accept any offer from them until you know more about them. So that's why I say, don't invite them in. Don't be only engage as much as you want, but never agree to anything. And always ask for their detail for you to contact them. Ask for a card or a detail. And most of the time, if you get a card, the problem is you'll notice quite quickly it will probably only have a mobile number. It won't have an address. It won't have any details of VAT or any element of, is this a proper company or insured? So there's very little opportunity or realistic reality for you to trust this person, because they're only giving you a phone number. That means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, we're contacted quite regularly by listeners around the county who've experienced this, and I'm sure those listening to us at the moment would say, yeah, I remember when something like that happened to me. And just one thing has come into my head here while we were doing the programme a couple of years ago. I remember one particular listener getting in touch to say that a particular tradesperson came up to the door, said that they were going to carry out work on her gutter. When they got up on the roof, then they actually broke the tiles on her roof and said, oh, by the way, you have a couple of broken tiles up there that we need to fix, and the build ended up costing thousands of euros. So there is that as well. In terms of consumer protection and rights here that consumers would have, there's no rights at all if you allow those in to do work, is there?
There's not, no, because this is a private engagement between yourself and a contractor, let's call it that. But it's a business between yourself and a person who has just knocked on your door. And that's the point I'm just trying to get across. You don't know anything about them. Nobody else knows anything about them. So if there is a problem, there's no way whatsoever contacting them. That mobile number, it won't be replied to, it won't be answered to, and to all intents and purposes, it will have been disposed of. But let me just, and I do not want to confuse this, but if you're dealing with a proper business person, there are laws protecting you, because that's the whole point. You've got what are known as, very often, I'll give an example. There used to be a situation where people were trying to engage with you to sign up to an electricity service provision, and they went door to door. Because there were so many problems with that, they stopped that practice. So very, very few people sell under any circumstances door to door, which is another flag, which is if someone comes to your door saying, I'm going to do something for you, you immediately should go on the alert.
Yeah,
it's the best way of putting it.
Yeah, no, super advice. And I was just going to make that point as well, Dermot, that look, we completely acknowledge that there are some fantastic tilers, roofers, plumbers out there who are doing this as a profession. And we're not talking about professionals. We're talking about those who are going around pretending to be professionals as bogus tradespeople that are conning people out of money and getting people into financial difficulty. So just to clarify that as well. Good advice, though. That is Dermot Jewell, Policy and Council Advisor with the Consumer Association of Ireland. Bogus tradespeople fraud up more than 80% according to Garda figures. And just on that note, by the way, there was a 58% increase in accommodation fraud and a 128% increase in fraud involving the takeover of bank accounts. Technology-based fraud has increased significantly since the pandemic, while other types have mostly declined. Burglaries have increased by 33% this year, but remain 38% down on pre-pandemic levels. sales. The Gardaí said burglaries had trended downwards over the long term, something it attributed to the anti-burglary initiative Operation Thor and the pandemic. And also, we touched on this yesterday on the programme, but just to remind you, assault causing harm cases are up 34% on last year and up 14% on 2019, while vehicle thefts have increased by 77% this year and 10% compared with pre-pandemic figures.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie. Kildare
KFM. So demand for electric heating, it is being driven by an increased use of heat pumps. This will see generation costs increase by as much as near 50% at 46%. This is a new study by the ESRI, and I'm joined now by the Senior Research Officer with the ESRI, that is Muireann Lynch. Good morning to you, Muireann.
Good morning, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. So this is part of the government's Climate Action Plan, a commitment to install 600,000 heat pumps in homes in this country by 2030 to offset the energy-related CO2 emissions. Big demand.
Big demand, yeah. I mean, the plan to decarbonise heat in this country rests on a couple of different components. So first of all, we want to install all those heat pumps, like you said. Then secondly, in order to be able to use the heat pumps properly, we need to retrofit, and the target is for 400,000 houses to get them up to a B2 BEOR rating by 2030. And then the final part of the plan, obviously, is to power up to 80% of our electricity from renewables. And then the idea is that we use electricity to heat our homes and we use renewables to give us the electricity. So with all of those pieces together, we decarbonise our heating sector that way. The targets that are in the Climate Action Plan are to do that by 2030. So we made that assumption when we ran this study. What we were looking at is what would the impact be on the power system or the electricity system itself. Now, what we didn't include were any kind of constraints on the construction sector or on financing this or anything like that. So we kind of assumed that we would meet those targets, but they certainly are ambitious targets. It requires rolling out heat pumps and retrofitting our houses at a much faster rate than we have done so far.
And with construction, we know there's currently a crisis in terms of, you know, having workers there all the time, you know, losing workers, you know, recruitment issues, timeline issues, COVID knock-ons. And then you're mentioning the finances. We're in a cost of living crisis. So this 2030 target seems to be, I guess, drifting away from us quite quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly challenging target. There's no denying that. And all of the issues you outlined in the construction sector are very real. And they're real across the economy, really. We're seeing labour shortages in many, many sectors. And then there's also the fact that the construction sector in Ireland is already under pressure to deliver new builds. So we're looking to simultaneously deliver a load of new builds and also retrofit our existing builds. And then in terms of what it's going to cost, it certainly would be incredibly expensive to retrofit all of these buildings. Whether or not you finance that from public finances or whether or not you finance it from householders or whether or not you go with what the plan has been to date, which is kind of 50-50 financing, where SEAI grants cover part of the cost and the homeowner covers the other part, is still very, very high.
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland do give grants to many people. You can check out the SEAI's website for more details there. But as you have noted yourself, you can't just pop one of these heat pumps onto an existing home and just, oh, that's well and good. Things are rolling now. Right. You need the house to be at about a B2 BEOR rating. These heat pumps, they can cost between 12 and 18,000 euro. If you're going with the SEAI grants, Muireann, how much would you actually be forking out personally?
Yes, I think the grant is around kind of 4 to 6K, but it sort of depends on which type of heat pump you go for. So kind of there's different types. So it's kind of like air to water,
So between the 12, it's 12 to 18,000, right, the price range.
Yes.
Most people will want to spend the least amount of money they possibly can. But how do you know what's your best bet for your household? Is it just you deciding? Is it like, you know, the type of tyres you may put on your car? You know, you have lower end, medium, higher end ranging in prices. Like, how does one go about making that decision?
I mean, the best way would be to get professional advice. I mean, there are a lot of heat pump installers, and then there are also a recent move is what was called one-stop shops, which is where instead of you saying, okay, I'll talk to one person about getting insulation in the attic, I'll talk to somebody else about a heat pump, I'll talk to somebody else about solar panels, you go to one of these one-stop shops and you get professional advice on what the best way to retrofit your particular dwelling is. But it certainly is the case that if you are going for a heat pump, you need to be at that B2 level already. So either your house is already very efficient, or you would probably need to do some external wall insulation, some roof insulation, as well as getting the heat pump. So you're going to kind of want to do it all at once.
You did know previously that heat is very difficult to decarbonise, and the alternatives for decarbonising heat, that would rely on technology such as biomethane. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, so there are alternatives for decarbonising the heating sector. So that would be, instead of trying to change the kind of the mode from kind of fossil fuels to electricity, instead we just try to burn a different type of fuel. So biomethane is a kind of a synthetic type of gas. So natural gas is what we have at the moment, and then biomethane is methane from a biological source. And so that what you kind of do is you sort of grow, you know, grass or some kind of a crop, and then you use an anaerobic digester to turn it into methane, and then you go ahead and burn that methane in your regular boiler. So you're saving on, you don't need a new boiler and you don't need to insulate your house, but what you do need is the biomethane, and that's incredibly expensive to produce. And we also would need anaerobic digesters, and we'd need a kind of a network to transport it around the place and stuff like that. Then there's also the possibility of hydrogen. You can burn hydrogen instead of methane, but then it's a question of, well, how do we get the hydrogen? How do we transport it around the country? Do we convert an entire grid to hydrogen? Do we convert parts of the grid to hydrogen? Do we keep it off-grid altogether? So these policies are certainly less thought out than the heat pump policy, because for the moment the heat pump policy is the policy, but there are alternatives if indeed the current policy just proves too challenging.
And again, something you have noted, one of the main things or the main notes to take about a heat pump is that the type of heat that comes from it is low grade. What does that mean?
Yeah, so what we're talking about here is how hot is what you're getting in, really. So what a heat pump does is it extracts heat from the air or the water or the ground and pumps it into your house. That's why it's a heat pump. It's pumping heat. So it kind of works like a backwards fridge. A fridge takes heat, and the pump takes heat out of your fridge and spits it out into the room and leaves the fridge colder than the surrounding environment. With a heat pump, you're taking heat out of the air and pumping it into your house and hopefully leaving your house warmer. But if you kind of stick your hand behind your fridge and feel, well, how hot is the back of the fridge here? It's not that hot, certainly not compared to how hot your radiator would get when you have it on full blast in the winter. So what that means is that we need the houses themselves to be much better insulated. You can have your house plenty warm with just a heat pump, so long as it's sufficiently insulated. However, most houses are not sufficiently insulated, and that means that the low-grade heat coming from the heat pump won't actually keep your house comfortable unless it's sufficiently insulated.
Right, absolutely, which you already have described to us here this afternoon or this morning. That is Dr. Muireann Lynch. She is a senior research officer at the ESRI, and we were discussing the new study by the ESRI finding that demand for electric heating driven by an increased use of heat pumps, which Muireann just described, will see generation costs rise by as much as 46%. Dr. Muireann Lynch, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mel.
Let's stay on the housing theme then, because Social Democrats councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Aidan Farley, is on the line. Good morning to you, Aidan.
Morning, Owen.
You had a motion brought forward to the full council meeting, and yesterday we were going through the numbers in terms of housing, but you wanted the council to outline the budget that's been allocated for renovating and reallocating its social housing units in 2022 and what this budget equates to in the number of homes that are reallocated to date. So tell me a little bit more about that and what response you got.
Thanks, Owen. Yeah, I suppose the crux of this motion lies in the many conversations that I suppose you and I have had on air, but also with a lot of other people, in terms of the absolute frustration that people feel when they see, in the midst of a housing crisis, houses lying empty. And while people have very limited kind of powers when these houses are private, I think it irks people a little bit more when they see that these are public houses that shouldn't be empty, right? So the motion we put in was to try and understand the manifestation of why it's taken so long let's say someone gives up that house and says, I'm moving, to the council be able to turn that house around to be reallocated. So we put in the motion, and the conversation came back from the council that really surrounded on the budget lines of about 10.5 million that the council has each year to maintain all its housing stock. And while that might sound like a lot of money to your listeners, actually when it comes down to the work of that budget, it could be swallowed up quite quickly. And then the pre-letting amount of that budget, so the amount that the council has to put in to houses once they've been unallocated to be ready to be allocated again then, is about 2.5 million, which is not a lot when you look at the many, many houses that the council have currently unallocated, and the time delay, then that's how it knocks on. And it's one of those consequences on of just us as Kildare being one of those lowest, poorest funded councils in the country. This is what happens when we don't get our share. It ends up really affecting people in terms of services.
Yeah, and it frustrates people as well within the community. And I reflected on a story there that's in the Irish Examiner today, where people and young people who are leaving care are having to sleep in cars and in graveyards because they can't get houses. You also asked how many units currently remain empty. When you say units, are we talking just about houses, Aidan? Because other people who are listening to us might say there's a hotel that's lying derelict in our town. There's other facilities that could be made into housing facilities.
Mm-hmm. This motion would have focused solely on the house, the council's own stock.
Okay.
So units would relate to houses and apartments within the ownership of the council. And then obviously there are others when we've had concerns raised before about leasing, for example, and other forms, but this is particularly focused on the maintenance requirements for the council's own stock. But you're on the money, and this is the problem, is that we shouldn't be surprised in 2022 to hear that story this morning. But it's an absolute aberration and a shock that we are not caring for young people who are leaving the system. We know that not only are they leaving the care system, but they need to be adequately supported and prepared for that. That requires a really comprehensive aftercare service. And we've seen a very positive step in Kildare with the opening of the service in Jenkinstown, but we need more. And we need better. And it needs to turn from shock, I think, to outrage, to really bring the housing minister and those responsible in the housing department to say, hang on, we can do better here. This is a failure on all levels.
Yeah. And you, final part then of the motion, you wanted the projections to be outlined for 2023 for those reallocations. Did you get figures on what the plan is for reallocations?
Yeah, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, Owen.
Okay.
But I know that the council has a very ambitious target. I suppose they work towards a shorter time frame as possible. And really, when we spoke about it before with Ann Street, people were saying, in Ann Street and Crossmouth, there's units lying there for months and months and months on end. And that was where the frustration came. And it was really to try and raise this publicly at the council meeting to say, is this normal? Is what we're seeing in the likes of Ann Street?
And that's a good example, Aidan, because not only are we going to use these facilities for housing, but I think is one of those houses in Ann Street going to be used as a community centre? So we can be, implementing other regimes and other facilities within communities here through these vacant and derelict units.
100%. 100%. And the benefit that community centre will bring to that community out there is going to be huge. It's going to be very hard to put a financial value on that. And what we're seeing, I think, and credit to the housing maintenance team and the housing staff within Kildare County Council, when they have the opportunity to show a bit of vision and creativity, they do it. The problem here lies in the supply of finances from central government to give the council the opportunity to be creative and to be reactive, as opposed to having to wait and a queue to build up. And that's my worry for 2023, is if we see a queue building up and we can't get these houses repaired from one allocation to the other, it's costing the council about €15,000 on average to get a house unallocated and ready to be allocated again. So there's considerable works taking place in those units, whether it's painting or different types of kind of pre-letting work. That all has to happen within a swift time frame when we are in a housing crisis.
Okay. On that note, with that issue brought forward to the full council meeting, that is Social Democrats councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Aidan Farley. Aidan, many thanks for joining us on Kildare today, this morning, and good morning to you. Now, just before we take a final piece of music on the way up towards the news at 10 o'clock, I want to bring you a local business story that has been announced today. Equine technology company Equine MediRecord has secured an investment for an undisclosed sum, believed to be just over €10 million, according to RTE. The company, which is headquartered at the Curra here in Kildare, runs a platform that digitally records the medicines and vaccinations that are administered to horses. This latest investment came from Chicago-based private equity firm Merit Holdings through their Innova Group Holdings platform, which also previously acquired Business Infusions, the largest equine veterinary software group in the world. The funding will now allow the Kildare company to drive the adoption of its platforms across Europe, also North America and the Middle East. It also plans to expand its growth and operations team. Piers Dargan is the chief executive of Equine MediRecord. He says it's great to be supported by Innova Group and Business Infusions, and that they believe in our goal to promote equine welfare and anti-doping best practices by driving adoption of our Equine MediRecord platform. This funding will help us bring our platform to more horse farms and equine events, ensuring equine welfare best practices are being adopted across those continents. And Equine MediRecord, which was founded by Piers Dargan, Simon Hillary and Finlay Dargan in 2016, is a previous winner of Trinity College Dublin's Startup Accelerator Programme Launch Box, and they are headquartered at the Curra, securing a €10 million investment from that US firm. Some good news for a Kildare business.